the move to our new building in Tacoma, but it's for you too. And it's a pre-Pentecost kind of message, so just a little ad-libbing here before we get into it so you know what I'm considering. This has been on my mind all week, and I wanted to bring a message about it. So if you want to start the recording, we can get right into the message then. We are very much like some of the people that we read of in the Bible. When we read their stories, we are also sojourners and pilgrims on this earth. If we read the story of Abraham and the generations of his family that followed, we can see that they were sojourners, dwelling in tents, it says. They moved from place to place, and they were always looking for that next place where God would lead them. They were strangers and pilgrims on the earth, having seen the promises afar off and embraced them. They were constantly on the move toward obtaining those promises. They were waiting for a city, it says, which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And that pretty much describes God's people through the thousands of years of the history that we have in the scriptures and on to our day today. And we are very much like that. Just like them, we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. The disciples who gathered today on the day of Pentecost that we read of in Acts chapter 1 and 2, they were also waiting. They were wondering what changes would happen in their lives. How would their lives be different in the very, very near future? There were 120 of them, about as many as in our two combined congregations of Olympia, Tacoma. When we're all together, it gives you an idea of about how many were there. They were sojourners too, far from their homes in Galilee. And many of them had come from Galilee. They weren't home in Jerusalem. They were told to wait there. And remember, even after Christ was resurrected, he says, I will meet you in Galilee. And they went back to where they grew up and where they began being called into the service as disciples of Jesus Christ. So they were, even at that day of Pentecost, sojourning away from their homes. Before that day ended, big changes had happened in their lives. And not the kind of changes that are just events that happen and then are just historical things we look back on, but like a spring uncoiling. If you think of the different things about events and what happened that day, if a big spring just uncoils, there's so much power and energy going while it's moving, but when it reaches the big extent of its expansion, then it's over. It was a greater event than a spring uncoiling like that. It was something much bigger than, say, a dam bursting. If you had something, I'm looking at big items, big topics of how important this event was, and try in my own artistic way to put it in perspective a little bit. Think of a dam bursting. I've seen videos sometimes of big dams with, you know, the high dams. There was one that burst and it was filmed, and you see that the enormous power that comes out as that water gushes down through a canyon. But what happened was an event much bigger than that. Or like a major earthquake. You know, there can be and there have been many big earthquakes on the earth, but when they're over, they're over. Well, what happened on Pentecost was something much, much more powerful than that. Think about, on a grand scale, someone was asking me today how I was, and I asked how they were, and then she said she was grand, but I like to think on grand scale things too. Think of a star that has been collecting all the mass of the material that's around it, pulling it in by its gravity until finally there's enough and the pressures are so great that this star ignites. And suddenly there's light there. And stars are forming all the time. And those are big events, and they last for billions of years through the lifetime of that star. It's even bigger, like a galaxy being formed. And bigger than that, a new religion. What happened on that day was very big. A new religion was established. A new church was being built. Before that day ended, about 3,000 more sons and daughters of God were added to the family. And very soon thereafter, another 2,000. So now we have at least 5,120 that we know of, and probably a lot more because they had families also. A lot of people were brought into the church in a very short while, and big changes were underway. And yet from this beginning, even from then, they were still sojourners, wanderers, always on the move. I was studying in the book of Acts about the beginning of the church. And as I read through, I just tried to pick out the verses that show the growth of the church itself. And I want to take you on a little journey, if you will, through some of their experiences. If you turn to Acts 2 and verse 46, and I'm going to go through quite a few of these. One or two or three would be sufficient to make the point, but I want us to see the volume of evidence here and then bring that into the context of our life today to see how the church was then, to realize more completely how it is today. In Acts 2, in verse 46 and 47, we read, "So continuing daily with one accord in the temple." And so what I'd like to point out, and you'll see this all the way through, is that never do we see that the church is brought into a particular identified building of its own. Here they were with now 5,000 of them in the city of Jerusalem with no place to meet except at the temple and in a few homes around. So let's read. I want to point out the meeting places of the Church of God. "So continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart." And verse 47 shows the result. "And praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved." And the church was growing, even though they did not have their own building. Even though there was not a large place where they could all gather on the Sabbath day, they gathered sometimes on the steps and the porches and the courtyards of the temple. And from house to house. And of course, that must have meant many different houses because they couldn't all fit into one. And so the church grew still. In Acts 3, we see that Peter preached a powerful and transformational and inspired sermon outside at the gate of the temple and on Solomon's porch. And again, this is where God brought his people together, and where many lives were changed as they came together and the word was preached. In Acts 4, we see that the new disciples shared with one another, even selling their possessions. There were so many coming in and so many needs among them, and many of these were travelers. If you look in Acts 1 and 2, you'll find that they were from all different directions, far away from Jerusalem in all the directions of where the Roman Empire was. They came from many, many different areas, and some were far from home and needed help to be able to stay there as the explosive growth of the church in its first weeks was underway. And they helped each other, and they were there together. In Acts 5, we see that they're still at Solomon's porch, there at the Temple Mount area, by divine direction. In verse 15 and in verse 12 through 21, let's read here in Acts chapter 5. And through the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were done among the people, and they were all with one accord in Solomon's porch. Now, these were large gatherings of Christians, large gatherings of members of the Church of God. Here, another outside service, if you will, by divine direction. And yet none of the rest dared to join them, but the people esteemed them highly, and believers were increasingly added to the church, multitudes of both men and women, so that they brought the sick out onto the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that at least the shadow of Peter passing by might fall on some of them. And in those early days of the church, when God wanted to really make a statement that he was working powerfully in this new group of people, great miracles were done. Just a little side tangent, I pray sometimes that miracles such as this will come again, and that people around us will know and experience the benefits of healing and the benefits that come to the world through the Church of God. And also a multitude gathered from the surrounding cities to Jerusalem, bringing sick people and those who were tormented by unclean spirits, and they were all healed. And then the high priest rose up and all those who were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were filled with indignation. I want to show you some of this history too, because we see why the church was nomadic at times, why they were wanderers and strangers in the land. And they, verse 18, and laid their hands on the apostles and put them in the common prison. But at night, an angel of the Lord opened the prison door and brought them out and said, go, stand in the temple and speak to all the people, all the words of this life. And so it's by divine direction that they go back to the temple again and speak. And when they had heard that, they entered the temple early in the morning and taught. But the high priest and those with him came and called the council together with all the elders of the children of Israel and sent to the prison to have them brought. And you could read the rest of that story, how they were then made to be able to proclaim this message so wonderfully and powerfully on that day. In verse 42, it speaks of the members of the body. Then it says, and daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. Notice what's missing here as we go through. And that is, nowhere do we see that the church had a building of its own. They were teaching and preaching, and the church was growing mightily, even without a big, grand edifice. Now, the temple was a very prominent building in the Jewish faith, and that's where they went often to preach this word, that there was a greater temple that was already being built. Let's continue then, watching and looking further into the word. In Acts 8, we see that persecution arose, and from this persecution, the church was spread through many regions of that part of the world. In Acts 8, verse 1, now Saul was consenting to his death, to Stephen's death, and at that time, a great persecution rose against the church, which was at Jerusalem. And so we know from this verse and others that there, in fact, was a congregation there. But we're never told where they met, other than the temple, the outside places. There's no building identified that were like the address for the church. But they were there, and they were a church. And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except the apostles. If you read that part of the story, you realize that as they were scattered, they taught this word, this faith that you and I know, to all the people around them in all those areas where they went. And guess what? Churches were raised up. And they had to find places to meet on the Sabbath day. And they did, and they grew, and they flourished. And we read of this history as we continue. And verse 2, and devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering every house and dragging off men and women, committing them to prison. And it was a very difficult time there for the church. No continuing city, as we read before. And therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. What if we were in a situation like that, and we as a congregation were scattered, not just from this building, but from this area of the state, and we had to suddenly move to other distant places? What would we do? Well, the people back then preached the word. And we see in verse 5 and 6, then Philip went down to the city of Samaria and preached Christ to them. So they didn't just wait. They didn't wait for Peter or James or John or others to come. They got busy and they began to preach. And the multitudes with one accord heeded the things spoken by Philip, hearing and seeing the miracles which he did. And again, God was giving evidence that his spirit was working there at that time. In verse 26, we see that even along the roadside, this was the word that was preached. Now an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, arise and go toward the south, along the road which goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. And this is desert. And what I'm pointing out over and over through this whole thing is that God's word was preached in many different areas in different ways by a lot of people, members, deacons, the ministry. There was a lot of effort to preach this word. And never do we find that they owned or had a building. They probably did in some of these cities, but it's not mentioned because buildings just weren't prominent. The building is the church. Christ said, I will build my church. And we are that temple. I wrote of this in the bulletin. You can have those notes to read later. And then a feared persecutor was called and converted. And we know of that history of Saul in Acts 9, in verse 20. Immediately after his conversion and baptism, in those early days of connection with those in Damascus who he had gone to persecute. In verse 20 of Acts 9, it says, immediately he preached the Christ in the synagogues, that he is the Son of God. I don't know if we can imagine what that was like, but let's say, what if I today, as a minister of Jesus Christ, showed up at a synagogue and preached what Paul preached to the synagogues in that day? That would be kind of a remarkable thing, wouldn't it? And yet this is what we find over and over in the scriptures of how this word was spread. And for good reason, Christ said in the promise to Abraham was to Israel first, and then to the Gentiles. And that's where, in the synagogues on the Sabbath days, where those of Israel would receive this word. And Paul and others, many, many others, went into the synagogues as they traveled and they spoke. And it is a big thing when that happens. You know, there are some synagogues around us, and I know if I just walked in there and I sat there, this would be something strange to them. And it would be something strange to me. And I would really need inspiration to do what was done here in these scriptures. But this is what happened. Also in verse 31, it says this, and then the churches, the congregations throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria had peace and were edified. And so there were congregations spread through all those areas, congregations that would meet on the Sabbath day. congregations where we would have messages and hymns and fellowship and the sharing of food, just like we do now. But again, note, we don't have no clue where they met. They were moving from place to place as the need arose, just as we are. In Acts 9, verse 32, it says, "Now it came to pass, as Peter went through all parts of the country, that he also came down to the saints who dwell in Lydda." And again, saints were there. Preceding the arrival of Peter, remember when those were scattered from Jerusalem because of the persecution that started and they went everywhere preaching the word? Look what we find when the apostles arrive in these places. Churches, saints. We find a church growing. The building of this spiritual temple is underway and already there. In verse 36, we see it at Joppa. At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. And the story goes on about how these two cities, the two congregations between Joppa and Lydda, were close and the people knew each other. Kind of reminds me of Olympia, Tacoma. When one thing happens to someone here, people in Tacoma know it, and we know what's going on there to some extent. It's very similar. In chapter 11 of Acts, we see this. We see that there was a place where the church could be found in Jerusalem. If you read the chapter, I don't want to break it down too much there, but there was a place where the church could be found in Jerusalem. When the disciples went, they could find where God's people were. So there must have been a location, or two or three or more, where they could go and find the apostles, where they could know that they would be there. In chapter 11 and verse 26, it says, "And when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. So it was that for a whole year they assembled with the church." And so there was a place in this town called Antioch where they assembled for a year on the Sabbath days. I'm building up to something that pertains to us. And again, when I just isolate this kind of detail out of the book of Acts and put it together, and you see how much is mentioned, and you can see the connection of how we are today as well. In Acts 12, verse 12, it says, "So when he had considered this, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying." So here we see the church in this area coming into a home. I don't know if any of you have been in such small congregations where you meet in a home, but we have, Nancy and I, and for years in Montana, we most often met in someone's home. And that was how things happened there. Now, this was not specifically mentioned that was on a Sabbath day, but there are other verses in other books that talk about the home, the church in the home of particular individuals. We see that kind of evidence. So just showing the variety of places where the work of God was done. In Acts 13, verse 1, "Now in the church that was at Antioch," and you see this Antioch, there were two different Antiochs that are mentioned, and this is the larger one. And you can track several different times when Paul and those with him came through Antioch and stopped and did a great amount of work and connected with people and wrote books of the Bible. You see some of these things here. But it was said, "In the church that was at Antioch, there were certain prophets and teachers." There was an organized structure within the body of Christ in these different groups, like we have. And it mentions some of their prophets and teachers: Barnabas, Simeon, Lucius, Manaen, and others that are there. And they ministered to the Lord and fasted. And so there was a group effort here going on. Brethren, we could go through the rest of the book of Acts like this, and we could see similar things. We could see that the church, that many even of the members preached as they traveled, and they set in place a leadership structure where they were, so that the church could meet decently and in order on the Sabbath days. And there were different travels that were in so instrumental in the building of the church and the spreading of the church from Asia Minor into Europe. And we read of the history of that in the book of Acts, and how Paul and others, they traveled up to Macedonia and to Philippi, and they find their people on the Sabbath day praying along the river. And they go and they are with them, and they begin to teach them and convert them, and the church grows through all those situations. There was a large and vibrant church at Ephesus. I want to look in Acts 20 and read some of this. In Acts 20, verse 17, "From Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church." Now, this Ephesus is a place where Paul spent at least two solid years straight in a row teaching them every Sabbath day. And the church was very large, very vibrant in Ephesus. And here, as Paul is coming back through, and he stops and he calls for the elders to gather together. They need to have a conference. They need to talk some things over. And so they do in verse 20, and he says, "How I kept back nothing that was helpful, but proclaimed it to you and taught you publicly and from house to house." While I'm thinking about it, one of the blessings that we can have is in-home Bible studies. I know we used to have those in Montana when we were there years and years ago. Our minister would come through once a month or every 2 months, and we would have a Bible study with a few who were in that vicinity to come over to a home and share a meal, have a Bible study. We can do that here too. That's one of the things I'd like to do in the next year that we are here serving you. But you see the pattern of how the church would adapt to all the needs so that the people could be served and the word could be preached. In verse 28, it says, "And therefore take heed to yourself and to all the flock." There is a gathering of people that Jesus Christ calls the flock. Not individual sheep spread out and never getting together, but they come together and they are a flock. "To all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God." And here we see then the focus. I want to just begin to narrow this down. The church of God. All through this history, we see that is what is being built. That is so much more important than any particular building where a congregation meets in a particular city. The building that's important is the church of God. And we see that today, don't we? And we understand that. So here's what I'm trying to point out today. The church is not a physical building. In Olympia, you are the church, and we meet in someone else's building. In Tacoma, the people of the church, and we meet in someone else's building. We've been meeting in a schoolhouse, and soon we'll be meeting in a different building called Fir Crest Presbyterian Church. I did some research, by the way, on the UCG website. I looked up every congregation in the United States, and I wrote down everyone that is meeting in a church building owned by another denomination. There are now, with Tacoma, 47 of our congregations that meet in rented halls of other churches. But we are the building that is being built. We should never forget that. I was also looking in the history. We've been looking today together in the book of Acts. There are many different reference books that are helpful in this, and one I really like is The Life and Epistles of St. Paul. It's by Coney Barenhausen. These are two scholars who in the 19th century took sailing ships and sailed on sailing ships through the Mediterranean and walked and traveled the same path of Paul on his journeys around that area. And then they wrote about those different cities. They wrote about the hills and the rivers and the forests. They wrote about what it was like there. And it gives a great and wonderful overview of what it was like of these people we've been reading about today in the book of Acts, and where they lived and how it must have been for them. And I gained so much by understanding the geography and the culture and what it was like to travel there and how steep some of those trails were that Paul took and why they were at certain places at certain times of year because of the weather. And so there are things that we can learn from the history written by others who have traveled those same pathways. They're very informative and much too much to bring all of that into a sermon. I wanted to concentrate on what we see in the scriptures, but we could add to it in our own study with things like that. I also looked at our own modern history of the church in the 20th and now into the 21st century, and many of us who were brought into the church years ago knew a man named Herbert Armstrong. Well, I was reading in his autobiography about how the church, when it was young in the 20th century as newly forming, where did we meet then? And so in the book on page 420, the autobiography, volume 1, on this one page we find three different little country churches where the Church of God met. I'll just read this one sentence as an example. It was just a short 11-night campaign in the little rented church building in Harrisburg, Oregon. And often, the Church of God has met in little rented churches, like we're doing here, and like we'll soon be doing in Tacoma. And that is an important part of our history. But we are still pilgrims. We are still strangers and pilgrims on the earth. We are without a continuing city or even a continuing building of our own. But it's not wrong that we think of and want a building of our own. And where I'm leading to is this. But Jesus said he would build his church, and he is building it. We see all that evidence in the history in the book of Acts and many other scriptures. He is building the church. And today we are part of that building. We are those living stones who are being built up, a holy temple to offer sacrifices of praise to the Lord. We are that building. But he wants us to also have a place to meet. And I was reading in Mr. Armstrong's autobiography of this section on page 437, and it's building a church, building a place to meet. And it's my desire that someday we will have our own place to meet, maybe in Olympia, maybe in Tacoma, maybe together. I think it's good that we can plan that and we can think about that. Because I look through the book of Acts and we see implied evidence that there was a stability in some of those areas where many people could go, and when travelers came through, they would know where to go to find the church. And I hope that one day we can have a place of our own. I was reading in the Psalms. And I see that I didn't write down the psalm unless it's on my next page. Yes, there it is. I had one more page in my notes. I'd like you to turn to Psalm 84. So I'm switching gears here as I conclude today. I'm switching gears because I want us to look forward to something. Abraham and his descendants were always looking forward to a place to go of their own. The Israelites coming out of Egypt were looking for a place of their own. And God brought them into a land and settled them. And we can look for a place too. A temporary one, yes. We're looking for that city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. But I think we can look for a home too. And I hope we will. In Psalm 84, in verse 3, it says, "Even the sparrow has found a home." In the first message, we heard of the sparrow and how God is concerned for even the sparrows that fall. And here's a psalm about a sparrow. "Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself." It's interesting, as we're moving to Fircrest Presbyterian, that they use the term nesting group. That's what they call us, a nesting group. And I like that term. And for you in Olympia, you're nesting here. So it's good that we have people who are willing to open their doors for us. "Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will be praising you." So I think we can look forward to that too, to dwell in his house. And there are reasons. There are so many good reasons that someday we could have our own house. As I was looking online at all the congregations in the country of United Church of God, I found quite a number and a growing number of congregations that have their own building, their own place, where you can put a sign out on the front, United Church of God. And it's his home for us. And I'm looking forward, brethren, to those things. Those are going to be part of my desire and plan and work for this area as long as I'm here, until we can find a way to make that happen with God's blessing. So let's look for a home. But let's realize first and foremost that we are the building of God. We are the holy temple. And any building, whether it's rented or owned, is just a place for us to meet. Tomorrow is Pentecost. Remember that we are sojourners and pilgrims, and that we are part of the church that Jesus Christ is building.